concert coming out, and it was in, what, 1986, it was Tougher Than Leather concert. Mm-hmm. So I came, after dropping my clothes off on Jeff Davis, I came right here, and the club wasn't really doing nothing, so I went in, seen the lady, she was in the club, wasn't that packed. Girl came in, see, my sister wants you, so I left out the club, crossed over on this side of the street, walked up the sidewalk this way, and I turned up Willow. Where I grew on, I grew up on Willow on the far end on this side. My building would have been on this side. Mm-hmm. So as I'm walking up the street, on this side there's a courtway and it's a light, but the courtway lit up. A guy hollered my name, "What's up, Skelly?" I hollered, kept on going. I walked about another half a block and got up here. Another guy hollered at me, hollered my name. So I don't know if these guys were telling them who I was by hollering my name. Or this. So when I heard that, I crossed over on this side. The guy came out the driveway and draw down on me. I'm like, "Where the keys at?" I'm like, "Keys you talking about? What you talking about?" He said, "Where the keys?" I'm like, "I don't know what you talking about." Where I'm standing at, my back is in the driveway, and the driveway will be anything like this lot, but it's black. If I can get to the inside of this lot, I feel that I'm not going to get shot. So I think he knew I was about to run or try to run, so he started walking towards me shooting. The first two shots hit me in my chest. The last one hit me, one of them hit my leg, so I fell. When I fell, I fell on the side of the car. We've been on this side of the street because he shot me from that side of the street. So that means he had to come around the car to see where I was. When he got around the car, I had pulled myself up under the car and was laying there like I was dead. My little partner friend came. Well, I say my little partner friend, my little partner moms came outside and said, "You didn't shot him enough. Leave him alone." And that's what made him stop. Yeah. Jump in the car. Guy pulled up and he jumped in the car and pulled off. So she came downstairs, her and her daughter had a watch on. The lady took the watch off. She kept my post, and her mama kept talking to me. So that by then, the people that heard the shots came to the area. And I was blacking in and out. I was going in, I was going in and out. Every time I would hear a faint voice, I was going out. Somebody hollering, you know, "Fight, man, fight." And I could hear some of the familiar voices, but I kept feeling myself blacking out. So it took like 45 minutes to an hour before the ambulance had made it to the scene. But when they made it, they put me on the gurney.
It took 45 minutes?
Yeah, for the ambulance to come in the project. So that's why when I got out of jail, after surviving that, I used to tell them 911 is a joke, because that was the song out at the time. Flavor Flav had made that song about the police. So, you know, that happened, but in the sense of, I don't know if it was just bad timing for me or just my curiosity got me. You know, I thought about it over the years, and kids still come up with the same thing. I saw it there, saw the keys in it, just like any other child, just like Baker. Your curiosity, I wanted to ride the bike. I knew how to ride a bike, but this was a Harley Davis. Took the Harley Davis keys in it, helmet on it. Never did I know that the bike was left there for drug, for somebody to pick it up. Mm-hmm. So that decision I made that one time caused me to get myself in the situation that I was in. I was bitter a lot about the situation, bitter towards a lot of people, because I felt like nobody really couldn't understand my situation. You know, they never knew what it was about. You know, everybody was passing judgment, and my grandmother, they got my mom and my grandmother scared because they're figuring, they saying, well, the guys may come back and get him because they didn't find a bike, and my grandma, she tripping. "Wherever the bike is, tell me so I can get it back to the people," this, that, and the other. Somebody, the man come knocking on my door asking me about a bike, and nobody knew where the bike was, so they never found the bike. The bike was right across on the other side of Tyler Donner in an apartment complex in the back, which was one of my best partners in T-House, and we covered it up and chained it to the pole like it was a normal bike. We just put back there and chained up. So it stayed back there for a couple of weeks. And when I come home, I just got it from my own. Everybody was putting up so much commotion. I just got my partner taken and moved from her house and brought it to my grandmother's house in the backyard. And the man came and got the bike. Mm. But he never got the drugs on it, though, you know. Mm. Another incident, I got shot in 82. I was 16 at the time, but I shot them because I'm behind jewelry. I used to wear a lot of jewelry, and the guy wanted to rob me on my jewelry. Two guys, rather. Probably had to have been 16 at the time. Got shot in my back, and my grandma must have told her that I can't be paralyzed, but, you know, I need to get out the bed and just start working and such and such. So my mom used to drag me out the bed that first time, and it pushed me a lot. I came back from that, but I think that was somewhat of an iron in the fire that made me wanna just go wild. Like, I mean, after I got shot down 16, I walked away from that, got my legs back. I felt like I had to pay my dues to the hood, and everybody had to respect me, this, that, and other. So I don't know, my mom ended up getting incarcerated in 80, like 85 or 86, I think. So that meant that it was me and my, when I got paralyzed, my mom was already incarcerated, so that meant my mama had already prepped me for if something happened to her, I had to be there for my sister and be able to take care of both of us. So here I was in the 12th grade in high school without a job, having to pay light bill, water bill, gas, send my mama money, make sure my grandma all right, make sure my sister all right. So the responsibility at the time, it was not, I didn't look at it as being overwhelming, but it was pushed upon me like as if, if you do or you don't. If you do, there's the possibility of what happens. If you don't, this. So, that being said, I pushed hard to maintain all the stuff my mom had left. She had a lot of stuff in storage, so I got tired of paying the storage bill, so I started packing the stuff in the house. Everything she had, I just put in the house. All her jewelry, all her clothes, all her jewelry, I packed in the house. So now it's like, I'm not going to school, so now I gotta pay, you know, find ways to pay the bills, and make sure I try to stay on my sister about staying in school. My Dale got slick now. Now my Dale not really telling me everything, and she not being 100. So she hanging with her girl, so she find this opportunity where my brother ain't gonna be on me that hard. She sneaking around, and she ended up getting pregnant as a result. My mama held that against me for so much, man. And like, really, it was a overwhelming weight. It was like my mama really wanted me to be in a situation where when my sister got ready to have sex, like I was supposed to just jump in front of the boy and say, stop what you're doing. I can't keep up with her knowing if she's going to school or not. So I explained that to my mom for a long time. Then eventually she gave me some gratification by saying, I understood, son, you did a good job. I know you couldn't be there to stop her with that. So that kind of like lifted a lot of weight off my shoulder, because I only wanted to do whatever I was supposed to do with my, for my mom, and I wanted her to be proud of me. But at the time when she said my sister got pregnant and held that against me, it was like I forced her, I pushed her, I wasn't doing what I was supposed to do. And I'm saying, she must more wanted to do that than me, because I mean, you know, to do it, because my dad didn't have to. So that being said, we cleared that obstacle, but the relationship with me and my mama distant, I mean, after I got paralyzed, and then she ended up getting married, so the relationship we had, we were like this, me and her and my sister. But as the years went on, everybody started twinkling and going their own way. My sister and me don't communicate with my mama as much as we should because of my mama's husband. I had a fight with him. I don't like him because he's controlling, trying to be self-manipulative. My mama is very intelligent, but I feel like she went into the relationship expecting one thing and she got something else, so now she's in a relationship where he done told her on numerous occasions that he don't have nobody there for him. So I know she feel like she should be there for him because he there for her. So that being said, that's their marriage. I love him, but I just don't like what he do. And I don't like that they come around when they don't have nothing. They want me to fix it, and when I fix it, you don't see him no more. But they don't give me credit. They could go tell all my friends about all the negative things, and they think it ain't gonna get back to me. As soon as they say it, it gets right back to me. And I'm saying, Mama, I look at you as being my mom. I wouldn't even sit down and entertain no thoughts of talking about me to somebody and figuring they're not gonna come back and tell me. Or you allow your husband to sit down and talk about me knowing that it's gonna get back to me. Mm-hmm. But, you know, me, I talk to a lot of people every day. I go places and I'm mentoring, I'm going to parenting classes at my grandson in school. All this to be, you know, to try to be a better parent, be a better grandparent, but at the same time, you know, just try to do some of the things for my kids that my mom never did with me. I played sports and was good in sports. My mama just didn't, my dad and my mom didn't make all my sports games like most parents did. You know, supporting the winning number. You know, my mama didn't have time for that. She was always trying to keep the bills paid or whatever. So I played sports and I was good, but I never had my dad in them in the stands, you know, like a fan base and none of that. So a lot of that, you know, over the years, I used to be asking myself, man, you know, How can I get my mom and my dad to show me they appreciate what I do, or they're down about what I'm doing? My mom will be me being, my mom and I being in a total relationship with my dad, because when they were in high school, they didn't want to believe that she was pregnant with me for him. So I ended up getting married. My mom ended up getting married, and I got a whole nother name from a guy that wasn't really my dad, but legally my dad now, because he the man that signed my birth certificate. But, you know, actually, I have two fathers. I have a father that's my biological father, and a father that took on the responsibility of raising me, and gave me his name. So, you know, having that, it's kind of strong structure. You know, to have two men when you want to talk about manly things that you can get advice from. But it's like, I'm at a point now where I'm so overwhelmed, so frustrated that I carry so much on my plate, and I try to, you know, I'm not open to talk to a lot of people, so I keep it in a lot, you know, and it's kind of, it's you get overwhelmed at times, so sometimes it's just pressure that it cracks. Mm-hmm. I go to second lines really to relieve, that's how I get a chance to relieve tension that I don't normally. We'll relieve during the week. If I relieve it, it would probably be fussing or get into an argument. So, you know, I get away, get in that little zone of music. Music does a lot to soothe a lot of other things that I go through. You know, my mama, the relationship me and my mama have, my mama stay right over here. I could get out
she
this
does
truck.
Now?
I could get out this truck and push up Claiborne this way to Louisiana Parkway. She stay right across the street from the daiquiri shop where they killed that guy at, where the guy supposed to got killed. But I can tell you, on both of my hands, how many times I've been to the house. And she stay right there because I don't get along with this dude. And it's so much stuff. You know, I had to get up. I can get up the steps and get down the steps. I just don't like him because he's materialistic and he's controlling. And it's like when I go around my mom and she's sitting on pins and needles because she's worried about what's the reaction he going to say if I don't say something that he gonna like, or if I don't say nothing approving him, I don't speak to her, I don't speak to him. I mean, if I speak to her, I don't speak to him, it's a problem. If I call on the phone and talk to her, hey, ma, how you doing? Oh, you ain't gonna speak to Aubrey? You know, so I just stay away, you know, but it hurts because doing 13 years in the prison, all I ever wanted to do was get back around my mom, spend time with her. You know, she got lupus and she's sick, but, you know, it's hard. But I mean, a lot of stuff that I do to try to keep my mind up what I go through to benefit, help any other kind of way I can to somebody else. I'd be a blessing to somebody else. But it's you know, I just pray on it. It's going to get better because I feel like even in God, I mean, when in our own good time, she'll come around enough to say, well, you know, I'm not going to allow this to be an open chapter where if I close my eyes, they're tomorrow, me and my kids are not on the same page. Mm-hmm. My daughter is, I mean, my sister is 46. I'm 47, so she don't have two kids. And neither one of us were around because of the man. You know how he is. He's sitting around looking. And my mom has never had nobody to be around her like that. So, you know, I see it from a distance. I play my distance like that. So when I came to, I had moved on this street right here. On Jackson, and they had some apartments they were staying, and I stayed with them. But when I got there and I seen how it was like I had to get my own because of him. He was always said something if a dish wasn't washed, something was out of place. You know, just minor stuff. My daughter came and she was pregnant. She come staying with me, asked my mom, what she doing here? And what you mean, what she doing here? It's my daughter. You know, so we had a lot of difficult. That kid said, I just pray on, you know, me keep my God allowing us to have a relationship before she closed eyes, because that's going to hurt me if I don't get back to where I usually be with my mom on that level.
So, Scully, what's the timeline? You talked about two separate incidents of being shot, right?
Yeah, I got shot in 82, which was at a second line, like April of 2019 was at a second line, and he was ending at the Young Men Olympic Club. But it used to be two Jacks at the time, but now it's the Young Men Olympics bar. And I got shot. A guy wanted to rob me, and he shot me in my back. And I kept on walking. I walked to the corner of Liberty and Josephine, which was, the corner was Catacomb from the bar. My grandmother was in the bar, and she came out the bar because she knew the second round was ending, and I was, you know, going to come up to the bar. Mm-hmm. And the guy shot me. I collapsed on the corner with all my jewelry on. They didn't get no jewelry from me or nothing, and I ended up going to the hospital for that. As a result, it didn't do nothing, just enlarged in my back. I come back from that, and it's like 82 to 86 would have been a 4-year timeline for me when I got shot in 86. It was like September the 29th, 1986. I think it was a Saturday night, probably around 11:45, 7 to 12. Night like this, you know what I'm saying? Club night, probably, you know, I used to always go hang out in the club.
What was that club called?
The Congo Room. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was the Congo Room at the time. I mean, this area used to be crowded at night. We used to sit out on these steps. That's a church that was right here. This is what they told on right here. It was a church right here. We used to sit on these steps right here. Mm-hmm. Come out that bar. I got in a fight with a couple of guys out in front of this ballroom, all kind of stuff. Man. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when I got shot in 86, it was a time for me that my mom wasn't in there, so me grasping what had really happened, I couldn't comprehend it at first, but as the days went on and the doctors used to come around and they're doing the diagnosis on you and they're saying, this is a 19-year-old black male with multiple gunshot wounds to the chest. As a result, he's a T12 incomplete.
So, what does that mean?
I was paralyzed. But I heard this for a while. Then he said the word paralyzed. So it resonated like paralyzed. So I'm looking at my feet, and every day I look at my feet. I want my feet, my toes to move, and things wasn't, you know, so. I really went to shutting down, but at the same time, I had to, I started getting to myself, asking me, well, if you're going to be like this, you got to tie yourself together. But it was like going back to my mama wound and being reborn again. I had to learn how to do everything over, and it wasn't nobody there. I had to really get myself back into if I'm going to be in this position to be able to survive. And it was grueling because I was 19. I was just really trying to be a man. And I mean, my dad, he wasn't there. My mom, she was incarcerated. My dad came the night I got paralyzed. The night I got shot. And he's always been there for me. We both of them have. But, I mean, it was like I was in a big hole. And I couldn't get myself out there. I couldn't get nobody to get me out of it, so I had to get myself out of it. But it was frustrating because I was so used to doing so much on my own that now I needed help. So then when I expected my friends and a friend that I called my boys to come around, they didn't. So I mean, I had to really start doing a soul searching and learning how to get out on my own. That's where being so independent like I am, that's where that come from. One of my friends told me he had no room in the car for me to bring me to a concert that me and him had already spoke on going to together. So that resonated home again. That really touched me to make me feel like I wanted to do anything I wanted to do. I was going to do it on my own, whether I had to start off early or start off late. But I would get there. So that's where getting out the house on my own, pulling my chair up the steps come from. Mm-hmm. You know, because the minute you put so much trust in a person is when that person is not going to be there for you. Not intentionally saying that person going to let you down, but sometimes you may have something in your life that you cannot put aside for that instance to, you know, to come do something. So you have to do something else. So it's, you know, it's hard when you're in certain cities like Francis. Francis can't get out the bed on his own. So you gotta wait for his daughter, you gotta wait for his nurse, you gotta wait for his wife to do all these things. I know how he feel. I know it hurts sometimes to be in that condition and not have nobody there for you when you feeling this is your wife. My situation is the same thing. I give my wife 12 years, but at the time of the 12 years I gave you, you didn't have to beg me. You didn't have to, I wasn't bedridden. I did everything in the house that another a weak walking man supposed to do, clean, wash, fold. I did everything I was supposed to do. I played my role because you were the barrier at the time by me just getting disability. You working, I'm there. Mm-hmm. But it came a time where I went to feeling like she didn't appreciate me and what I brought to the table. So I really started getting mad. And I'm like, well, if you feel like that, I mean, you could take this and do it all by yourself. So that's why I'm mad with that, you know, my wife. And it's like, I told her, I said, man, yeah, you more credit to, you know, I would have never in a lifetime thought you would have did me nothing like that, man. Mm. You know, that's like, that's tame. You know, I can never trust you no more, because if you wait, one argument we had one argument, we used to have arguments and I would just leave just to get space. Come back 2 or 3 days later, everything cool. Where you at? Call, I'm coming by my sister, all right. This particular time, you packed everything I had. So I felt like you were intending, you had this already in your mind, but you wanted an opportunity for it to happen so that that would have been you the reason to do what you did. Now, as I know, and everybody know, I know, your children know, and they're rebelling. But I'm cool, but I just don't like the way you, if you'd have told me, man, we need space, I can respect that. You didn't go about it that way, so that's the business in my heart as far as with her. You know, but other than that, I mean, I'm good. I just, I'm more focused on getting Push for Change known and doing a lot of things through Push for Change. And in the process.
As you start talking about, I'm going to go ahead and start the car and we can start moving towards it. Keep talking, but start moving towards the McDonald's.
McDonald's, that one. See it right there?
Right there? Okay. I also wanted to ask about, in your teenage years, you talked about dancing, like, down in the quarter for tips and stuff, yeah, for the tours. Yeah,
well, it started dancing, for me, started in the hood. You know, you danced in your hood, you danced at the block. We had block parties where DJs would play, and, you know, but for money, just to hustle, just to get down and get the camaraderie and go down there. We used to take shoes and put taps on them, my old pair of tennis shoes, the old pair of shoes, and
like go bottle tap.
Bottle caps. We were taking, but we when we were doing the bottle caps is a thing now, we were taking real taps. We would go to
really?
The and buy real taps to put on your shoes, or get a pair of shoes and buy taps. And we were going on, we would go to Canal. You're going to probably go all the way to the other corner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Coming back around.
Like, yeah. Okay. And, we go in the quarters and hustle tourists. I might tell you a story. I said, I bet you I could tell you where you got your shoes at. And that was the question. Where you could, you know, first impression you would think I'm actually trying to tell you where you bought them at, but I'm telling you that you have them in New Orleans on Bourbon Street with the Voodoo, and that's the catch to the question. But a lot of people didn't know that. So, you know, that was a hustling question. They might give you a tip, you tap. Dancing was a big thing for me. I felt like when I was that age, I wanted to express myself and show people that I could dance, so we went to quarters and danced. And it went from the quarters, it went from dancing in the quarters to dancing at a lot of places for people. It went to dancing in clubs, concerts. What the fuck wrong with this car? But at the same time, you can go ahead.
Okay.
At the same time, you know, all that made the appetite in me grew about dancing, so we started doing world fairs. We started going out of town dancing. I grew up in on Josephine LaSalle, where I started a little neighborhood group that was, you know, all the kids in the neighborhood, you know, and it was fun.
Did you have a name?
Yeah, our group name was Footloose Breakers. We were good. Mm-hmm. We danced in the Superdome, won a trophy. My mom became my manager because the more we went in the quarters and danced, people were giving me cards, get this to your manager. And so I just made my mom a manager.
How old were you?
We probably about 16. I probably was about 16 at the time. And all the kids, I had probably about one or two more dudes uh-huh. my age. And everybody else was, excuse me, 12, younger.
Uh-huh. Under. So was this before the first time that you were shot, or did you keep dancing after that?
Yeah, like, well, the first 82? Time I shot, it was in 82. I, you know, after I got away, I went back to dancing.
Uh-huh.
It was like, it was normal. We went to the club. That's what you did. You went to a house party. That's what you did. You danced against your friends on Canal. You, you know, we went on Canal for Mardi Gras, and you had guys bring, we used to walk around with our own music, so it wasn't hard for you to stop and see somebody and want to challenge somebody and dance, and you had your radio. So, you know, that's what it was about for me. Mm-hmm. Then I was like 6'4". I was considered tall and lanky. So, you know, guys looking, there used to be a lot of jealous guys because I was tall. And we speaking on it right now. There were people saying, well, yeah, you know, he was bad. He was, you know, a lot of people was jealous of me, which it was because of my dancing skills. It grew a lot of animosity. Then I dressed good. Then a lot of girls liked me. So I got into a lot of fights at block parties. I got into fights at house parties. I even got in fights at, you know, just because, you know, dudes just didn't like me, you know. And the love I had for basketball and sports and dancing, I went everywhere. If it was a basketball game and the best played, I went there. If it was an area where the best was dancing at and I wanted to go, I went. Any contest that it was, we won a contest in the 80s for the Joy Theater. The Joy Theater was giving a rap contest. Sporty T, Gregory D, some of the hottest artists in the city had applied to get into the contest. The week of the contest, everybody in our neighborhood telling us, if y'all don't place, if y'all don't win first, second, or third, y'all sad, don't come back in my neighborhood. Y'all better not talk about y'all rap, could rap, none of that. So it was like we had to carry our hood on our back, and we walked from Josephine to the Joy. That's like coming right up up Simon Boulevard, under the bridge, past the Greyhound bus station, and we were in the process of walking. We run in our lines. We run in our verses together. So Sporty T and Gregory D was considered a hot rap group that was in high school. They went to Kennedy. We went to Booker T. So that being said, I had a rap group I started. Plus, I had a rap group at Booker T that was called the Trip Boys. Trip Boys that I rap with and also dance with, too. So things went to getting where we went, you know, starting getting the competition at school, but when we started rapping and we started the group for Felicity Crew, we started opening it up for different rap artists. We opened it up for Two Live Crew one time, you know, and it was everybody at the time, like you say, it wasn't about money, it was about getting exposure and getting people to, you know, visually see who you are in your own city. So that's what it was. It was an opportunity for us to do something. We opened up the show and everybody enjoyed it. They talked about it. So Joy, back to the Joy, me and Tootin went to the Joy, and Sporty T and Gregory D, they dressed in the eggshell, shell toe Adidas and Adidas jogging suits, so they looking like real rappers. Me and him had on some jeans and the same type of shirt, mixed two different colors, jeans and our tennis. So we running it. Everybody bragging about they gonna win and this, that, and other. They went before us, and they sounded crappy because they were trying to scream into the mics. The audio wasn't all that good. So I'm telling two of them, like, Tude, you cannot. You see how they trying to scream? I say, you cannot scream. Don't scream. Just talk into the mic like you talking. Your words going to come out smooth. You're going to hear our rap. It ain't going to sound distorted. I say, you hear how they sound, and that's how it's going to sound if we go in there and try to holler and scream. So he had a part at the end of our rap. He says a prayer verse where he says prayer rap on that verse, and everything was going good. He spit the last course of the verse, shut it down. Everybody jumped up high and screamed. So, you know, the crowd was the judge. And they let the crowd judge, and we won. So when we won the contest, they were waiting outside for us. They like, well, look, we got some more money. We want to put that money up with y'all money. He said, we ain't got nothing to prove. We don't need to take no more money. We came here, did what we need to do. We won this contest. We proved that we won. Got the prize money, y'all be cool. Boy, they was burnt up. They didn't want to hear that. They didn't want to hear that at all. They was like, oh, man, y'all. So, Sporty T and Gregory D made it big. But when they made it big, Gregory D had made it big and got signed a good big contract, and he didn't bring Sporty T with him till like a year later or two. And I felt everybody in the neighborhood, everybody that knew him, felt like that was wrong. Because once he hadn't got up, that's just like Run DMC and then when they started. Russell Simmons was their manager. If Russell would have said he's going to take Run and don't take DMC and Daryl Mack, the man, DMC plus your brother, Cut Creator, where the group ain't what it is. You can't make number one person. Mm-hmm. You know, so that being said, Fred? Huh? Hello? Fred. Yeah, what's up? Huh? I ain't home, man. I'm gone. I had to go do an interview. I ain't at home. And I ain't, what you call this car, man? I don't have no more. No, they gone. All right. Now your sister just called. I know the girl called him Freddy, but you know.
So when the dancing you were doing in both of these venues, like on the street and in the contests and the clubs and stuff, was it like tap dancing on the streets and then more like?
It was tapping
like,
in the quarters. Mm-hmm. It was hip hop when we danced in contests at the Superdome dances for you know they had Superdome dances. In the quarters when we danced as a group, as a foot line, it was breaking. Breaking was that next level of dancing for me. I learned how to tap. I really learned how to dance for my mom and them. My mom and them would get together, family gatherings, and they get in the house, put music on, you be in the room, they come out, come show me you know how to dance. And that went from learning how to dance in front of my people too on weekends or when I'm inside doing chores, I turn on Soul Train on the weekend and I'm looking at Soul Train one. Dancing through the house, cleaning up. So it went from that. And I never was shy to get in front of a crowd of people and dance. And I went to start getting in contests. I went to winning contests. It went from that to start second lining. My grandmother put me in second lining with the old man, Mr. Bucket. And that's when I started second line with the young men. And being in school, I was the most popular already. So any school dances they had, I was the tallest one in the school, so I went danced. I'd be the main one in the circle. So the culture itself for New Orleans music, period, whatever the genre of music it is, once you are bit by that bug, you just, you know, I listen to jazz, I listen to R&B, I listen to country, I listen to Zydeco, I listen to excuse me, any type of music that is catching to the eye. I mean, catching to my ear. I went to the first time I heard Zydeco to me was like second line music, but it's a fast tip. And then you know it's something different. But when you hear it, still has that southern flavor. It still has that same effect on me because I used to laugh because I would say, man, damn, if I was in this chair, boy, I'd be picked up the Zydeco because you see them swinging out, and they, you know, it's a big old crowd of people in the club, and the club just going one way, and everybody like, I'm like, ooh. So I got into it and listened to it, and I started, you know, vibing to that type of music. Jazz. When I started listening to jazz, my favorite actor when I first saw on the screen was Cicely Tyson, and I saw Cicely Tyson in Roots. And when I saw her in Roots, I always followed her from then on because I don't know if I gravitated to her for seeing her as a black woman, you know, black slave woman, being a mother. And I gravitated to her being, but I followed her for her whole career. But then I find out years later that she's married to Miles Davis. And she's been married to that Miles. Then I found out that Miles was fighting bad drug habit. He was a real heroin addict, but she still stuck with him until the end. So, you know, that was what I liked about her, and that's the way I was taught, and that's what I saw in my grandmother marriage and her husband being married 30, 40 years. So, you know, I looked at her as being a strong woman that came from a background of people that told you that regardless of what your man go through, you stand firm behind him through all that. You know, and men, you know, back in the days, you used to have people still say, you know, the man, but I mean, the woman's place was that she knew her place, and when someone said she was behind him 100%, whether it was right or wrong, because that was her place, that was her husband. It's different now. The vows don't mean nothing. It's just a set of words to a lot of these people, and I mean, it's sad because we losing our kids, we losing our women, we losing our men because of the lack of respect and really knowing and appreciating another person's feelings, you know, to a degree where you respect her feeling like you want her to respect yours. The relationship has to be the same way too. I respect her space and I want to respect mine, but we got to want to grow together. And what you say, I take in the contents from you, and you say whatever I say to you, you taking the contents. Mm-hmm. But there's so much rebellious stuff going on to now, you know, this everybody wanna do them. I do me, you do you. Mm-hmm. So that's what's cool, and it's a whole different era, it's a whole different means of respect. These young girls not respecting themselves because they feel like they got to be halfway dressed, walking around, you're, you know, doing all this here for you to be a approved, I mean, be accepted by this person. That person not accepting you for who you are individually, he's just only accepting you for what you've given him and what he can get. It's not about your heart, you know what I'm saying? The children are like, you know, like they say, these kids don't have, what they say, what that word is when you don't have empathy? Feelings. You know, I'm serious. You know, some kids, like, you would look at you, like, you smack kids sometimes. Some of them will just stand up there and look at you like, and wouldn't cry because they feel like if they cry, that makes them look. So, you know, having feelings, being crying and letting go of your feelings at a time, they'll bottle it up, and that's why these kids are so the way they are. You know, when you get out and they got so much stress and so much anger in their hearts behind pride and stuff they don't know how to release. And their way of releasing it is hurting somebody, harming somebody to a degree. Mm. Oh, put your window down. Open your door, open your door. Say Maurice, boy! Say you Maurice! Nah, I want to see if he in there. He probably ain't going to hear me. He got in that car. Hell, my boy.
In the car?
No, not in this car right here with him. He in the other car. He had a damn hat on his head. That's my daughter friend.
Oh.
He probably heard me, probably looking though. He in the car, probably like, man, fool.
Yeah, and it's like, who is
no,
that?
No, but he ain't in his truck. There you go, right there. There you go, open your door. Say, Mo!
Yes.
Say, you Mo! Look, he came up here. Yeah?
He has headphones.
Yeah, see, that's
we'll see him inside.
Should we go inside?
What time is it?
It's 8:39,
right?
Go inside and have a tea or something.
Come on.
Yeah, can you just hold, can you put this in your pocket?
Yeah.